people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day. Broadcast insolence, is it not?
It is.
That red button is the
yeah,
one
that
says,
the one to touch.
Yeah, I got
not,
it.
Not the OFF button. It's the other one.
Yeah.
So I got it. All over it.
I should not be making fun of anybody.
Yesterday along was those rough lines. For you.
Yeah, no. It's been a rough. Yeah, the whole thing's been rough. Yeah. We're just in a rough moment here. All right. Listen, we have many things that we need to get to today. Not related to the most serious of news, but the most important news of the day. And that is, I think that World War III is going to start with us and Canada. And it was all over an international incident last night.
True. That was
in
that
Toronto.
Was tough to see, tough to watch. I know we're going to talk about it later, but it wasn't right what happened.
And luckily, the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis' mighty art players have put together an etiquette guide for when it is appropriate to applaud. Mm-hmm. And when an opposing player goes down in a heinous, potentially career-ending injury,
not
it is not the time to applaud. And I stop, and the Canadian flag, the Canadian people last night, and the flag, I guess, too, the Canadian people that were in the Toronto Dome or whatever the hell that thing is called, mm-hmm. they were watching their Raptors take on the Golden State Warriors when Kevin Durant went down and literally you could see his muscles like a window shade up in his leg, right? Bad injury. And, you know, he was just coming back, right, from an injury. And now there's this was a terrible thing. And they were like, woo! I'm like, what happened to you, Canada? What happened
to
you?
They were so polite. That's what they're known for.
Do we blame Drake?
I do blame Drake. I was going to say that. I do.
I don't blame Drake. Drake did try to put his hand on Kevin Durant's shoulder as Kevin Durant was taken off the court. Is Kevin Durant on the team? I see him sitting in the Toronto Raptors bench. Is that okay?
Drake, you're talking about?
Drake, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they gave him special seating there. He's sort of been like the team mascot. And he's very animated every single game. And he was very, you know, you could tell he was upset when he saw Durant go down. But not a good look for some of those Raptors fans. not a good look.
Yeah, they even showed bars full of people who were applauding. In addition to what you saw there, now there's video of like bars of like mass watch parties, you know, and they're applauding too.
It makes no sense.
What is wrong?
Canadians are supposed to be the nicest people in the universe.
Totally.
Now, when it comes to sports, I guess, people get real dumb when it comes to high-intensity sporting events.
Well, I know basketball is all new to them because it doesn't involve ice, but it ain't right. And I was pulling for them, too. There's a couple reasons I'm pulling for them. First of all, I don't want dynasties. There's only one dynasty that I consider counts in the NBA.
Right.
And that's it, and I don't want anybody to take it on that dynasty.
We're done with dynasties.
Right.
That's the one.
Yes. So, and as much as I think Golden State is an amazing team, and it is fun, and the fact that they bought Kevin Durant, that they basically made an all-star team, right?
They already had an all-star team before him, and then they're like, okay, let's bring in the best player in the league, too.
And now from the West, right? Yeah. I mean, there's no reason for any other team to, I mean, why do they even put players on other teams? I don't even understand. But and then Toronto kind of came out of nowhere, right? They got
Kawhi Leonard. Trade with the Spurs,
right? And Kawhi Leonard he's the MVP if they win this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's played lights out, just amazing to watch. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really fun series.
Yeah, unexpectedly so.
Yeah.
I would say.
And I also thought this will be a very awkward moment because the president can't invite them to the White House.
Right?
So
wouldn't go anyways, probably.
Right.
You're like Ted Cruz. You're Canadian.
Yeah, you're not allowed to go. So I mean, it would be so. It's at least we don't have to endure that wacky, very uncomfortable scene that we have had to endure now of late. Right.
Right.
When any sports team has to go to the White House.
Although I think the Warriors have declined the past 2 years because they're going for their third straight. Remember, I don't think anybody from the team's gone the past two.
Well, but he can't invite Toronto at all. So I like the idea of that. So it's sort of like at least we'd get just avoiding that. And it was just kind of fun. And I was kind of pulling for Canada because they've had a rough couple of years because they keep getting called Jags for no good reason because they're very nice people. And
allegedly,
then this happens, and all of a sudden I change my tune. I'm having dinner with my daughter and son-in-law, and they're cooking, and they're treating me like a doddering old man. And there's a dog licking me. And the next thing you know, this happens.
Please tell me you did a spit take.
I did a spit. You know what? Literally, my Goose Island IPA came out of my nose.
Oh, ugh.
And that's
it
burns. That burns.
Does burn.
Oh, and it was bad. I was like, all right, that's it. I got to go the other way now.
I mean, players on the court from both teams were kind of waving off the crowd initially because it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You can't cheer on an injury. Right. What are you doing? And then by the time Durant was leaving for the tunnel, there were still some people you could tell being dummies. But if I heard it right, I heard some KD chants from a large section.
That was
crowd.
Documented.
Oh, yeah, KD.
KD. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, KD.
Sorry,
Poser.
Sorry that your muscle went up in your leg like a window shade. All right.
Well, it's just not right.
Better send us some syrup and some Molsons. Some sorry notes.
What else do they do? Some hockey jerseys. We got a 1944 Toronto Blue Jays, Toronto Maple Leafs jersey we're going to send you.
Sorry, KD.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Tim Hortons gift card. We got that for you. All right. Hold on one second. We'll come right back. Well, on the other side of the news at the bottom of the hour, as I said, Rokan Show with Anna DeVonce's Mighty Arts Players, you know what I meant, have compiled a list of do's and don'ts with clapping that we're going to send to Canada. We're going to hand it over to the ambassador.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. We know him.
We do.
Well, the former one. He can't do anything
now. Friend of the show.
Yeah. So we'll just have them make sure that they get that all worked out. But first, Lourdes Duarte is going to join us in the WGN TV newsroom right after we find out what is happening in the WGN radio newsroom. Jen DeSalvo.
Speaking of fun, watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Lourdes Duarte. Wait, hold on a second here. I gotta hit all the right buttons. See? Even a broadcast genius such as myself can make a mistake.
Wow. Veteran button pusher like yourself.
There's special buttons for Lourdes?
There's a Lourdes
button.
Yeah,
there is. There is. A very special one.
Yeah.
We don't get to use it enough, Lourdes.
Ah, you're sweet. How are you, girl?
Congratulations.
Thank you so
much. On the news,
much.
I was not here the other day when you shared that very wonderful, exciting news.
I know.
With
Thank
our
you
audience.
So much. I'm going to have a little one just like you.
Yay.
I know.
Yay. Oh, it's going to be awesome.
I know. Thank you. We can't wait. We can't wait. What are you guys doing over there today? What's going on?
Bro, you have this look on your face like, what do you mean?
We can't wait.
Why are we, this isn't good news?
I'm so happy about this. Wait. You know, it's so great. Like when you come home from the hospital and you're like, oh, isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
This little one is alive and with
I'm terrified.
And then,
kind of scares me.
Two hours into it, you're like, what do we do now? Oh my God! Call your mother.
Well, but I think the oh my God part starts a little bit earlier for the woman.
Yeah, you know what?
It's
I'm
like
terrified of that moment where I take her home and I'm like, okay, I need to make sure that she's breathing and that everything is fine.
Right.
So I've been kind of
I mean, in the hospital, even when you first go in to the hospital, not knowing what that whole experience is like.
I'm okay with that. It's the fact that I have a little human being that I have to make sure she's okay.
Yes, it's in your hands. She's in your hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For the foreseeable future.
and the way it's been going, they're at least 30 now, right? They stay at home. So it's a long journey.
We'll see how it goes. So I'll be calling you guys asking for advice. So if I call you at like, you know, 3 in the afternoon, 3 in the morning, please pick up.
I've done it all. I've seen it all. I was the dad that called the pediatrician in the middle of the night because my daughter had her. All of a sudden, her fingers got totally swollen.
What?
They looked like
that stuff scares
like
you.
Hot dog's eye. There's a little baby, right? She's weeks old, and she's got like this, you know, like this crazy, like swollen thing in her hands. It's like I'm like, oh my god, what?
So what happened?
The doctor said, and her mom had long hair. So the doctor said, can you see if there's hair wrapped around her fingers? And you literally, like, unwrap, like, a long string of hair.
Strand of hair. It was cutting off her little circulation?
Well, it was just creating,
like,
yes,
up.
Right.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, okay, thanks, doctor. Gotta go.
I will tell you, the age technology has really helped that all that stuff, because my pediatrician, you would take pictures of anything you saw that was weird, send it to him, and he would reply, just like, don't worry about it. So it saves you trips to the doctor if you have a doctor who, you know, does that sort of thing.
And now you got like YouTube, you know, for the kids who like to play video games and stuff, right? For parents, they got a guy with a a New Zealand accent who's like Squinky or whatever, who tells Dr. Squinky about how to actually get the hair off of your kid's hands. You know, that's what it is.
I feel bad right now for anybody who were to look at my Google searches in the last 3 months.
Right.
Oh, no.
Because I have looked up everything about babies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
About the birthing part or the taking care of part?
Everything. Okay. Yeah. Every time I will be looking up what happens if your kid's fingers come home swollen. That will be one of the searches now.
Right.
How do I handle that?
I made a point to never look at any videos of the actual birthing process. I just didn't want to know. I'm like, throughout centuries, women have been able to handle this. I'm sure I'll be able to handle it, too. I don't want to see it. I don't really want to know that much about it.
I'm with you on that.
Did you handle it?
Yeah. No, I don't want to.
Did you handle it? What was it like for you?
We also use an app for contractions. And at that point, 7 years ago, the apps were not that good on that stuff. And so I got to the hospital ready to go.
That's good. You don't want to be sitting around there.
No, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. It turned out it was not good. They put me on a gurney and my head was hitting against the wall. Like, they were getting me to the room so quickly because they were worried that I would, you know, have the baby in the hallway kind of thing. So it was sort of this rush, ER moment.
That's
I was like, why is my head?
Now you're scaring Lourdes. Yeah. Look at what you did. Look at Lourdes' expression.
I guess you're not supposed to do that, right? Okay, when you're talking to a pregnant woman, you don't tell those stories.
No.
It all went great.
That's fine.
It was fine.
Totally fine. I have no feeling
easy.
In my right
Actually,
way.
Actually, speaking of babies, I'm going to transition into a little news. What do you think about that?
Right, let's try it.
This is a good transition, actually.
Yeah, we'll see.
Did you hear about this CFD delivery today over at, River West? Is that where it happened?
This
morning at about 8:50 this morning, a car drives up. There's a lady in the back seat in labor. This firefighters had never actually delivered a baby before. They had been through the training.
They showed up at a firehouse?
Yeah, they showed up at a firehouse. They thought, what better place to do this than a firehouse, right? Yeah. So
hospital.
They show up. The firefighters all come out with their equipment, and they're like, lady, hold on. Let's call the paramedics. She's like, nope. Baby's coming right now. So the paramedics all got ready. They delivered this baby. Everything went picture perfect. Baby boy born healthy, strong. And the firefighters now say, hey, you know what? We're going to have to use this as a training tool because it went so well and in case it ever happens again. But they had never actually delivered a baby. They had seen it. They had witnessed it and helped in the process, but never actually delivered a baby.
Because firefighters are cross-trained as EMTs now in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Emergency medical techs. And so, you know, that should be a part of that deal. You know, was it last month? There were three police officers who had to do that too, right?
We had one of them on the show.
Right, and they were like, hey, it's coming. And it was in front of the police station. And people came running out of the police station, and they were like, and one of them was like, I don't know, my wife just had a baby. I'll see what I can do.
I was there in the room. I guess I can help out.
Could you imagine?
No.
Yeah.
You think about the tremendous responsibility. It's just,
Lourdes comes pre-panicked
right now. I don't want to be
right
in that situation. Okay. I don't want to be in that situation.
What, you wouldn't want to be in the newsroom and Ben Bradley could help deliver your child?
That's a dream come true for
Ben Bradley.
He told me
he's not going to put me in his car because he's worried that it'll create a mess.
I
wouldn't want Ben.
Bradley. Please do not allow that. As a matter of fact, the last trimester, you should have them put Ben on vacation or train him to L.A. or something for 3 months and then he can come back. Because he'll volunteer.
I mean, he's that kind of guy. What?
Yeah, he's a little creepy. All right.
Oh, boy.
All right. We got to go.
All right, guys.
Thank you. Finally, we got some news in. Nicely done.
A little bit.
Yeah, you saved us slightly. Thank you.
We'll Lourdes see you
Duarte.
Later.
See you on the 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. Or whatever that is.
She's going to be the best mom. Don't you just get that sense?
I'm getting a baby niece this week at any time, and she's going to be born at home with a doula and a midwife.
Are you going to be there too, or no? You don't get to be there as the sister.
Is this in a water birth? Is this like in the bathtub?
It is.
Like Gwyneth Paltrow?
In one of those pools or whatever. But I asked.
It's like a kiddie pool. And you get to keep the kiddie pool too for, you know, later.
Well, who would want it?
Next time? I don't know. But I'm not planning on being there for the birth, but I do plan on going as soon as everything is taken care of.
Okay.
All right. Well,
exciting news.
Good luck to them. Yeah. Doula and midwife. I happen to like emergency. I mean, I like maternity wards myself.
Yeah.
But that's because there's a coffee machine, and so I like to step out and go. I'll be back.
Well, that's actually something my sister got. It wasn't on her baby registry, but one of her friends bought her a cappuccino and espresso maker.
Oh, that's
the perfect gift.
Right. Here, get that in the baby pool.
There you go.
All right, on all fours now. All right. Good luck to everybody. Oh, God. All right. Too much.
Ew.
All right. Shall we? All right. We got the news with Jen DeSalvo. You just heard from her right there.
We're talking babies.
Yes. She's going to give us the news coming your way in 2 little minutes. Yeah. Well, not all applause is created equal, as it turns out.
No, not all is equally appropriate.
Last night in Toronto at the Canuck Dome or whatever we call this thing. Where do they play?
Toronto Dome? That's just a guess.
Toronto. It's something that you would think. It's not the TD, which is Toronto Dominion.
Scotiabank Arena.
Scotiabank Arena.
What?
That's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going over to the Scosh.
Let's go to the Scosh there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to watch the big black guys play with the round ball.
Jeez. And when one of them goes down, we're going to all cheer.
Okay, now remember, I mean, they are hockey fans. Let's face it. They all started as hockey fans.
Mm-hmm.
But have we ever witnessed this kind of...
In sports?
No. I mean specifically Canadian fans.
No, because they're never really... I don't know. I'm sure the hockey games are brutal and ruthless.
Right. I mean, when a guy gets checked into the boards, you know, that's... Yeah. But everybody does that, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, basketball is a different game. Basketball is a non-contact game.
But maybe that's why they were confused.
They might have been confused.
Oh, yeah. You're not supposed to break a guy's leg, eh? Oh, no. I didn't know that. Okay, you know, and hockey is so tough. These guys, they beat the crap out of each other, and then they laugh at it.
And then they have beers together right after the game in the locker room.
Oh, yeah, I broke your nose, eh?
Oh, remember I knocked you out there?
With their missing teeth and everything?
No, I don't remember that. Did you? I don't recall. Uh-oh. I better go see my head doc again.
Sorry for knocking you out there, pal.
Okay. All right. I think I just came true. Okay. All right. I'm going to go kill you now. So that's the kind of thing that goes on there.
It is.
You're like in hockey.
Yeah.
But you don't see the fans applaud.
Plus,
I haven't seen that.
Plus with NBA, like hockey, it would have been, I guess, tougher to pinpoint the booing in a way. Because of the way basketball just is, where it's a smaller court.
The play is over.
I mean, the fans are right on top. You can see a fan right behind Kevin Durant mocking him and pointing and laughing.
Yes. All right.
So a little different, I guess.
So for those who do not know what happened last night, let me explain. It was Toronto Raptors at home in a series deciding, you know, this for the NBA championship. They win, it's over. They were up 3-1 coming back home, were the Toronto Raptors, against the two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors, right?
Right, facing elimination, the Warriors were.
Yeah, and Steph Curry and then a bunch of guys with names I don't pronounce. So it was a big, big, big deal. And, you know, Toronto's been nuts. The entire nation of Canada is getting, you know, kooky nutso over this thing, right? Because this is like an opportunity. They only have two. They don't have Vancouver anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the...
That's Memphis now.
Right.
Used to be the Vancouver Grizzlies. Approximately 17 people attended their games over a course of multiple seasons.
Right. That's where they moved to Memphis. It's just fine now.
Wouldn't this be their first NBA championship ever?
Yes, it would be.
So it's huge.
And they haven't won an NHL championship in 500 years. I hate to point that out to them. Mm-hmm. They haven't won the Stanley Cup in a long time. So they're a little bit, you know, prickly about this whole thing.
Well, right. They want it so badly. And I used to want them to win, but not so sure after what we saw last night.
Right.
Right? The nation was kind of on their side.
Yeah, a little
Until.
Bit. Some of the nation was. I don't think California necessarily was.
Of course not. The Warriors fans, you know, hardcore, you're not. But it was kind of refreshing to see someone new take the Warriors and really, you know, look as if this is real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then here's Kevin Durant, and here's what happened.
Ibaka trying to stay with Durant, knocks it away, and Durant's limping. Durant goes down holding his leg. Ibaka goes up. And it's fouled down the other end. And Durant grabbing that right leg. And his teammates going over to check on him. I don't like to hear the fans cheering.
I'm surprised by that. And the players are telling him not to be doing that.
No question. To cheer for a player who gets injured.
You did. You saw players on both sides say, come on, guys. This is not... This is real. I mean, this isn't
right.
This guy's down.
Yes. I mean, the Raptors players are like, whoa, 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 when they're doing that thing with their arms, you know, like, I don't, and they're all looking at each other going, who the hell are these people, man? Like, there was kind of this moment of, because they're not from Canada either. Let's just point this out.
The players
are really? Not from Canada.
They don't just draft all
right.
of them?
No. These are not homegrown talent, Canada. Right? I mean, these are guys that are like, wait, we don't, this, I mean, and these, and I'm also going to guess something else. I'm going to guess that, in the NBA, there's less crossover of hockey fans in the NBA in terms of players than probably any other sport, right? Just hockey is a, you know, maybe in baseball there's some hockey fans. I don't know. But not in basketball. So they're like, what is going on? You just heard it. It was deafening and it was definitive. It wasn't like they were confused.
No.
And they were just happy there was a turnover. They were...
No, they knew. He was clutching. Yeah. He was holding his leg. It was clear. They all knew he was returning from this leg injury.
Right. And he's
kind
gigantic
of a re-injury.
Star.
Yes.
You don't know it's an Achilles, though. It's not like you see that and go, yeah, it's Achilles injury for sure.
No.
You don't know that, but you know that he came... This is what... Didn't he just come back
right.
from a month off
yes.
For a lower leg injury? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, boom, he's pulling on the same kind of leg. You kind of...
Same leg, same thing. Right. Now that... You know, it's interesting because the staff... The medical staff is being criticized for letting him go out.
I think they should be. I think they should be. I mean, I know they were facing elimination. He's one of their stars, and he was playing really well until that moment. But can you not look at yourselves a little bit after that decision to let him play 1 month out?
Oh, yeah. Let's blame it on the doctors, eh? Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a championship. He already missed 10 games. How long are you going to sit out?
Well, the player wants to play, but I think that they would have known.
I mean, they were very, very cautious with this. He missed 10 playoff games.
I know.
Well,
this is socialized medicine. This is what we're going to get here, by the way, Bernie Sanders.
But when he goes down like that, it's, right. I mean, doesn't that say that it was too soon? Doesn't that prove the
I
point?
I don't know. Well, but that's not what we're, yes, okay, fine. But with a point we're trying to, we'll give you the point.
Thank
what
you.
We're trying to make now, yeah, don't get in our way. What we're trying to say now, the important thing we're trying to say is that this is you cannot applaud other people getting cream.
No, I think we all agree with that. I mean, it was obnoxious and like so wrong and so un-Canadian. It's so un-Canadian, isn't it?
All right, I want Justin Trudeau on the blower. I need to talk to him.
We do need a prominent Canadian to explain this.
To explain exactly what went on.
In French either.
We need a full apology. Full apology from Canada. I'm surprised. I was so surprised Trump did not tweet about this last night.
I know.
So surprised.
It's perfect.
It's perfect for him. I'm surprised he didn't slap tariffs on him for this.
Biebs is Canadian too, right? Maybe they were, snowballing off his picking fights with people.
Maybe, right. Yeah, all of a sudden the Canadians are going to get aggressive.
Start fighting everyone. We'll kick your ass there.
Paul Schaefer just challenged me to a chugging contest. Oh, God.
Is your friend William Shatner, isn't he?
Yeah, he's Canadian.
Yeah, we could get him on the line again. We'll have to get him on the line. He could explain it.
Right.
Famous Canadian.
All right, so the Rokan Show with Anna DeVantis, Mighty Arts Players, have put together a guide for when it is appropriate to applaud and when it is not.
Hello, and thank you for your interest in proper etiquette, a guide for the misinformed. Chapter 17, A Member of the Crowd. Section 4, Clapping. Clapping is the most common sound that we as humans use without our vocal cords. We do it as a social gesture to show approval and admiration in groups, crowds, or by ourselves. In Western etiquette, a study has shown that the clap of an individual actually has very little to do with that individual's personal opinion. It has more to do with the feeling of belonging in a group. This can cause confusion for some on when clapping would be considered inappropriate. One should never clap during the following: a funeral.
And now, he will be deeply missed.
I will miss you, Doc. I will miss you, man.
After someone delivers bad news.
Mr. White, you understood what I've just said to you.
Yes. Lung cancer. Inoperable.
Woo. That's pretty bad.
In the middle of a performance of Taps.
Yeah! For the truth!
After your boss announces you're being let go.
Andrew, if you say no one more time, you're fired. So, is there anything else you want to say?
No.
Sorry, Andy, you ain't need that job, no way!
before a golf swing.
Hey, Gilmore, you suck, you jackass.
Wow, what a swing.
After a verdict is delivered in a courtroom, especially if it's your own guilty verdict.
In the matter of the people of the state of California versus Orenthal James Simpson, we the jury in the above entitled action find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of penal
free OJ.
There you go.
I like that.
Right. I mean, it's not that hard, right?
No, it's not that hard. And when Kevin Durant's Achilles tendon rolls up like a window shade.
Oh.
Another reason not to applaud.
And you could feel it when he was like cringing in pain holding his leg, too. It wasn't like, it wasn't absolutely obvious, which is, I think, why they cheered even louder.
Drake came over to console him. And he had, then as soon as Drake touched him on the back, he looked up into the crowd and Kevin Durant said the word that the Chicagoans are very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
To themselves. That and then you up into the crowd, which I thought was, again, kind of a nice moment. And I thought, this is World War III now. Now we got to go to war with Canada over this. This is like Archduke Ferdinand. There's no reason that we should be having this problem.
No, it was pretty simple. I just to think that this is Canadians doing this. I just can't believe it. Can't believe it.
All right.
But why did Drake break down so much? Didn't he go a little crazy there? I think he was so emotive about the whole thing.
I think Drake might be pre-crazy. I think we might already have
comes
that. Yes,
pre-crazy.
He comes
to these games.
Pre-crazy. Yes, I don't think we. I mean, it needs like a reason. Coming up at the 4 o'clock hour, does Russia want to kill us? We're going to find the answer to that. Congressman Kinzinger is going to be joining us. Because do you see the Russians are going after us in military confrontations?
Gee.
Yeah, that's not so good. And then the commissioner of Chicago's Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection is going to join us. Talk about the motorized scooter program, which is starting this weekend in Chicago. I think it's the most ill-conceived thing the city has done.
What could go wrong?
And we have done some ill-conceived things over the years.
We have.
But this one, but we'll find out. The city must have a plan, right? They wouldn't do this without a plan, would they?
They're testing it.
Okay. We're going to find out the answer to all of that. But first, Jen DeSalvo in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, coming your way in 2 minutes. That means
we do.
Congressman Maverick is joining us. Adam Kinzinger, he is he's 16th congressional district in the state of Illinois, and that's exactly what you get when you call a congressman. You go, what up?
That's right.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. I saw him semi-naked over the weekend. That's all I'm going to say. All right, listen. He was, you know, let's take his shirt off. It was hot outside. It was hot. We were out at an event, and he, you know, the guy. And as I said to him at the time, if I could do that, I'd do that too. All right.
Hey, when you're in a convertible, you know, 1970 Cadillac, you gotta.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No more details, though. It's all good. We're good.
Mm-hmm. I have a few follow-up questions.
Yeah. No. It's all right. We'll save them for later. We were at an event, and there was an antique car there, and they'd let us take it for a ride on this sort of long, unpaved stretch of area, and it was to see what we could do with it, you know, and on private property.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they were racing airplanes, I heard.
I don't know what was going on. All right. Let's talk about what's going on. Speaking of airplanes and racing airplanes, now we have got with the Russians. We have had a couple of situations over the last number of months. Now, in terms of aviation, the Russians, we encounter the Russians often around the Arctic Circle, right? In terms of our air forces and their air force can often come into contact with each other as they're doing, you know, that age-old nuclear patrol that they do.
Yeah.
They've got nuclear bombers up there. We've got nuclear bombers up there. We've got fighters. They've got fighters. And we've been doing this dance for 50 years up around the Arctic Circle, right? So now, in more stressed times between the two nations. Sometimes you get a pilot that every once in a while goes, you know, I'm going to show you a thing or two. And you're imagining their commanding officer told them to do it, where they do, you know, an unsafe flyby or a situation. Now, we also had that just happen in the sea just recently with naval operations. What do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple things. Number one, I mean, you imagine they have, you know, 20-year-old pilots that are going to go out and have fun. And, you know, the difference between Russian pilots and American pilots, though, is theirs aren't very good. And, I mean, they don't get to fly a lot. You know, they don't let them go up and train a ton because they just don't have money. You know, Russia, I think it bears keeping in mind, they have a GDP, like, roughly in between, I think, Italy and France. It's like two trillion. So they don't have a lot of money. It's a declining economy. They don't fly these guys, and that's the danger in all this is, you know, you have somebody that goes up, decides to hotshot, they're doing a little show of force, and they end up clipping the wing of one of our planes or anything like that, and you could see how this quickly could escalate to an international incident. And so, you know, while, I mean, this is kind of old hat, you know, it's been going on, the increasingly aggressive posture of Russia is concerning, and especially given the fact that these guys they have flying are not really good pilots, so it's something to be concerned about.
So what message are they sending, though, and how much of this is accidental and due to pilot error, and how much of it is message sending? Like, what are they?
Well, you know, the actual intercept is usually trying to send a message, and, you know, the message is we're here, we're not going away. I don't know, you know, how much we get of that message, because the bottom line is, you know, we know that they're not very good, and we also know we don't want to fight Russia, so it's... But it's just kind of, you know, they're showing that they're still here, they're still around, they're being aggressive, and it really has the potential of being dangerous. So you look at that, you look at what they're doing in the, they do the same kind of thing in the Baltic and everywhere, and I think, you know, it's they need to be careful to not escalate that. And it says a lot, too, for our pilots and our military, you know, to show the level of discipline they do in that process.
Right. But it's still very dangerous. And you wonder, I mean, obviously, there have got to be some sort of repercussions for what they did during the election in 2016. They're undoubtedly going to attempt that again in 2020. Yeah. You know, they kind of want to be a thorn in our side, right? Isn't that a little bit of what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, this is what concerns me, I think, the most about it is Russia is now a partisan issue. And, you know, some people on my side of the aisle say, you know, that Russia is not an issue to worry about at all. Some on the other side of the aisle, you know, say things like Russia got President Trump elected. So regardless of your view on that, the point is, that they are trying to undermine our faith in democracy. And if you undermine or you turn populations against each other, which is exactly what's happened, that's the only way that an authoritarian government can beat a democratic government, to take our biggest strength but turn it into a weakness. The weakness is... You know, obviously people have a right to their opinion and they're going to disagree. And the weakness is when that elevates to a point where we can't even talk about things like Russia interfered in our election or how do we push back against Russia, China, and other places, because, you know, the other party becomes the bigger enemy than the actual enemy.
Well, I think that's where leadership comes in. And without putting too fine of a point on it, there could be some leadership that says, hey, the most important thing is that we're all Americans, and whether you liked the outcome of the 2016 presidential election or not, or you like the outcome of the 2018 midterms or not, the reality is that we have to band together. We got to make sure that the Russians aren't interfering, and we can't weaponize each other. We cannot make enemies out of each other. And that leadership has to come from the top, and that is lacking in Washington. You're not seeing that. You're not seeing that out of the White House, right, because that's part of the act. But even in Congress, you see a lot of guys on your side of the aisle, congressmen, who are sitting on their hands during this, where they would, you know, that in other circumstances would not be sitting on their hands. And then you see Democrats making hay out of it for political gain. And it just, no one is stepping up and being an adult and saying, hey, the real existential threat is Russia, and for these reasons, and we have to look out for that, and that's and move beyond, because there is an election in 2020. We do not want them interfering, and we do want to believe in, you know, the veracity of our system, not only the count of the votes, but also that we're getting proper information.
Yeah, and you're 100% right on that. I mean, there's we can all debate over what percent of blame goes to where. I agree, there needs to be different tone from the top on this too. But the fact is, we're all in this, and we all have a bit of a responsibility to bear. And even people, when you're on Facebook, for instance, and you only look at the stories that comport to your worldview, and things like the Russia situation, where were they effective? They created stories, RT, Russia Today, you know, would create these fake stories, and they'd get picked up all over the internet, and now you'd see it as truth. And the point, you know, I say to my friends on both sides of the aisle is, you know, they could be attacking Democrats today, they're going to attack Republicans tomorrow, and vice versa. They don't care who wins. What they care about is chaos. And this is where we have to be grown-ups. And we can argue impeachment issues, we can argue, you know, all that kind of stuff. But this is existential to the point that, you know, a country that is outmatched by the United States can use a low cost of entry on something like this and come in and really wreak havoc.
What's really going on in Mexico, do we think? In terms of what do you, as a congressman, know that they have agreed to? What do you think is going to be effective? Obviously, you know, when you're not doing your congressing, you're doing your air forcing, and you've flown the border as an intelligence operative for the Air Force. You said when you came back from your last deployment that it was that you believe it's a crisis on the northern border. They clearly have a crisis on the southern border. What can we expect from this?
Yeah, so I really actually take the president's side a lot on this because I think, you know, we'll see if Mexico implements the deal. I mean, one of the biggest things is that would have an effect on this is saying that if you declare asylum, you have to actually stay in Mexico for your court date. And because, as you know, the system's being overwhelmed. They can't get people through enough, and a lot of times what we do is release them into the United States because, as you know, our detention facilities are to max capacity. And then, you know, only a certain percent of them show up to their court date. And when they do, only, I think it's something around 20% actually qualify for asylum. It's a real crisis. And, you know, the Democrats, it's to their detriment to ignore this and to make this political. Look, Trump's made it political, too. I'm not going to pretend like everybody's innocent in this. But this is a real crisis. And what you have is, you build 10,000 beds for kids, for instance, and then 11,000 show up. You build 11,000, 13,000 show up. And then when you have these unaccompanied minors, you have three options. Send them back to their home country of origin, which is tough to do, or you release them without any parental guidance, or you hold them. And that's the problem, is everybody has weaponized this issue, and there's a massive, serious crisis on the border, and we're sitting here twiddling our thumbs because we just care about who gets the political wins and losses, and that's got to end. That's got to stop now.
So the president was touting that Mexico will now help stem the flow of people immigrating. They'll stop them in their country, presumably. They're putting more border security up, and then they avoid the tariffs, is what the president is saying, this 5% tariff on all Mexican goods. He said it was a huge win. Is this part of a plan that's going to work, Congressman?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, if it's implemented, yeah. I think, you know, the idea, obviously, Mexico's going to have a tough time controlling their border as well. We have a tough time controlling our own border. But the difference is, too, now as these caravans, you know, kind of make their way through Mexico, there's different enforcement mechanisms that can be done that way. Mexico has a responsibility. I mean, literally, you know, people would be understandably irate if everybody that came to the southern border of our country, we just said, hey, hold on, let's just push you right up here to Canada. And that's, in essence, what's happening with Mexico. They have a huge problem with the cartels. The cartels are funded by two things, drugs and human trafficking. And they're making a ton of money on this because all these people are passing through cartel territories. And man, the cartel, I'll tell you, is as or more evil than ISIS. And that's something that doesn't get enough attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's clearly stuff. Complicated. But I guess the question is, this kabuki theater that we've been watching between the Mexican government and the Trump administration in terms of, we're going to do this, we're going to give, you know, tariffs, 5%, then 10%, then 15%, all that. It seemed almost, you know, too simple.
Yeah.
And then for the Mexican government to stop and say, all right, no, we got it fixed. All right, we're gonna seal the southern border. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do that. Don't worry about it. We got you. And then he goes, okay, no problem. All right, no tariffs. It seems like that could fall apart unless the whole thing was just done not to solve the problem, but as you point out, Congressman, just to make political points, and that could be a problem.
I would agree with you, but I don't agree with the premise. I think the bottom line is there is a real massive crisis, and I think the president, I didn't like the fact that he used tariffs as a threat, but I think it was effective in actually kind of getting Mexico to say, okay, we're taking this seriously, and the proof will be in the pudding. But I think we have to admit and get past the politics. This is a serious crisis. And if you're worried about this idea of kids, you know, in so-called cages, which most of those pictures actually came out of the Obama administration, the reality is, well, what are you going to do with an unaccompanied kid then? Are you going to release them in Dallas without a parent? Because right now our social service systems are overwhelmed, you know, or are you going to send them back home, which is actually virtually impossible to do because you don't know where they came from? That's the difficulty we're facing, and something's got to be done. And it's got the message, and the Obama administration did this in the past, the message has got to go to Central America. If you make this journey, it is really dangerous. Don't make it.
Okay, so what do we do to stabilize those countries? Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. Those are the three countries that people are coming up for.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a longer-term gambit. I mean, it's a corruption issue. There's corruption all over the place. It's an economic issue. It's having hope and opportunity. And it's also messaging, like, I mean, we have compassion for everybody that's in a position, in a place that they want to live in a better country. We're lucky to live here in the United States, but we can't take everybody from Central America. And the reality is, when a third of women are assaulted on that journey, that's a message the people in those countries need to know. Or if kids are abused, that's a message they need to know. And I think, you know, all of that, from giving opportunity and also being clear about this journey, is all part of this broader, grander solution.
Right, but they're being assaulted in their home, too, and they're trying to flee that.
Yeah, they are, but there's instability in those countries, absolutely. But the assaults that are occurring on the journey would actually disgust you if you knew all the details. And the fact that, you know, you're really playing that there's a third of a chance it's going to happen to you if you're female or a child is absolutely disgusting.
I'm looking at the border statistics. They talk about apprehensions. For the month of May, 144,000 people apprehended at the southern border with Mexico. And I mean, that's a remarkable number. Year to year, that's a threefold increase, 51,000 in May of last year. It's it obviously is a strain on resources. And what do you do? How do you stem this tide? Is Mexico helping us alone going to stop that? Going to help with it?
It's going to help. It's going to be the message getting out. It's going to be us changing our asylum laws, frankly. I think Canada actually just recently did that as well. They didn't get a lot of attention for it. It's making that clear because, I mean, think about that. In 1 month, that's just the ones that were detained, not the ones that crossed illegally. That's as many people as participated in the 2003 Gulf War on the American side. You think about that, Shuna, or as many people as participated in D-Day. That's just 1 month. That's a lot of human beings, and our resources cannot hold that.
No, that's no question.
Congressman, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there goes Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Official Congressman of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVolantis.
We had somebody weighing in from the 217 who seemed to know something about your car races over the weekend, but I guess we're keeping that secret.
Huh?
They seem to know about the car races.
What do you mean they seem to know about the car races?
They seem to have information about said about car races.
What do they know? I don't know anything about that. I don't know what they're talking about. They're liars. That's fake news.
1970 Cadillac won two of the three races with the Stearman biplane.
Jen DeSalvo's got the... What do you got in the news?
I got real news.
That's right.
When's the next deck party?
We haven't had a deck party this season, actually, now that I stop and I think about it. We've been doing a lot of stuff, but we haven't done the... You know, the weather...
It hasn't really been...
Has been a little goofy.
Too rainy. Yeah. Just couldn't plan something like that.
I was out there this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was at
on the deck,
taking care of my grand dog.
And your grand puppy?
Yeah, my grand puppy.
Aww.
And he's you know, and we got to get him fixed. That's all I'm going to say. That is the most important thing right now. I'd like to make that official announcement.
Uh-oh.
Big fan of the mailman?
Yeah. Oh, big fan of everybody. Big fan of everybody. He's an English bulldog, too, and he likes to jump. He's got right now is the only time he's going to be able to jump because he's like 30 pounds, right? That's it. He's 5 pounds away from not being able to get off his feet ever again in his life. And he is enjoying the idea of the humping. That's all I'm going to say.
Have you gotten humped?
Oh, I should be pregnant. I mean, it's like, it's crazy.
They say like 6 months is the time that you can do it. It was 6 months and 3 days when we took our puppy. Nope.
And sometimes it doesn't stop after that.
Yeah.
No. That's true. If it is, if they've already sort of gotten the testosterone hit, it's a learned thing, they continue on with it. He's going in for an oil change, though, too. He's got, like, three things. Because he's an English bulldog, he's got 16 different conditions concurrently right now.
They look like little cinnamon rolls.
Yeah.
It's so adorable.
Yeah, he is adorable, but he's got some things. So, he's going in for, like, a whole
you know, work up.
A whole tune-up.
Tune-up.
And then, you know, come back out. So, oh, my God. Yeah. So
classic just, humping.
Yeah. I'm like, that's my leg! That is my leg! My leg!
I don't know how you untrain that.
I don't know either, but I'd like to know how to untrain him. Mm-hmm. He's very adorable. But then he's so cute when he's doing it, too.
Oh,
he's got an innocent look on his face.
No. I don't think anyone likes that at all, ever, right. Even from a cute little puppy.
He's like, aw, he's humping my leg. He likes me. All right, Jen DeSalvo's got the news, brought to you by Lindemann Chimney and Fireplace.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. We're talking about one of Ro's favorite things here coming up. I'm going to guess you're going to be opposed to this whole thing, Ro, but we're going to learn all the details about the new scooter program.
Don't prejudge me.
I am. You're judgy, and I am prejudging you.
You're prejudging me because I prejudge everything else?
Because
is that
you
what
do.
You're doing?
You do this.
Well, that doesn't seem right.
I think it's totally right, but I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to listen to this whole scooter program that is unveiling this week in the city.
So the idea here, well, I'll let, you know what? We have the expert.
We do.
We have the person from the city who can explain this. Commissioner of Chicago's Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, Rosa Escareno. And Rosa's going to help us here begin to understand. Because the idea of this, Rosa, does not appeal to me. I am very worried about what is about to transpire here in Chicago. Because the idea is motorized, sort of a divvy program for motorized scooters, right? That's the idea?
Yes. And look, I understand that you may have some concerns, but look, in Chicago, we decided to do it differently from other cities. We are testing in a very conservative program with a total of 2,500 scooters in a very large geographic area. They're not going to be downtown where you have a lot of congestion, right? They're going to be primarily west of Halsted. On the south, the river is the limit. And on the north, the river and as far up as Irving Park. And then to the west, city limits. So it's a very large geographic area for 2,500 scooters. And we have built and designed a pilot that we think places a lot of ownership for the companies to address the issues. And when they don't address them, if we, the city, have to step in and correct them, we will be citing the companies if they're not addressing the issues. So I think, I think it's important that we test a pilot here in Chicago because I think many people will have those same concerns as you do, Ro. And we want to make sure that through a pilot, we can determine whether this is something that's going to work here in Chicago.
Okay. I got a couple questions. Let's start with this.
Yeah.
All right, so it's west of Halsted primarily. That's where these are going to be available. But what happens if you try to take the scooter east of Halsted?
Well, the beauty of technology is that we are requiring through geofencing that scooters not be allowed to operate within those outside of the geography area that I just described.
So, okay.
So what will happen
so
if you're riding?
It locks up?
No, well, at some point, we don't want it to lock up right away because we don't want you to bounce off of it, but it will slow, and then it will come to a stop as soon as you hit that particular geofenced area. So you will not stop immediately, but it will slow and then stop, and then it will not be able to operate outside of the geography.
Okay.
But in a safe way, though, right? I mean, that's the
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know golf cart technology has this, too. Like, if you drive in a place you're not supposed to drive, it slows down, it beeps at you, it tells you not, you know, that you have to back up or do whatever you have to do. But that's, you know, that's like, that's an open area. These people are going to be on the roads, right? They're going to be on the streets, surface streets. All right, so so now where do people leave them? I know one of the problems other cities have had with these is that people just stop and leave them in the middle of the street, and they're large. Larger items than bicycles in a lot of ways. They're thicker.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we have very specific instructions working with the companies to ensure that these scooters operate just like bikes. So, for example, wherever a bike today can be, this is where scooters can be. So, for example, they cannot be on the sidewalk. They can park them in areas of the sidewalk that are not obstructing the public way. And again, as I indicated earlier, if we find that these scooters are kind of laying out in the middle of the street, in the middle of the sidewalk, or in the middle of the street, and they're not correct. corrected, we can issue violations to the company just on where we find them or where they are identified. So we have very, very strict requirements for these companies to ensure that they're compliant. But look, I think through a pilot like the one we're launching, it's important for us to test that. If we start to see that this is a big issue for us, guess what? We can either suspend that company and boot them off of the pilot, or we could terminate the pilot depending on how many problems we see.
So what do they do to the consumer? I want to take this from the consumer side. So let's say I go out and I get one of these scooters and I'm riding around and I'm a your standard Chicago Jag, and I just leave the scooter out in the middle of the street somewhere. Does the company find me? What happens? Well, how does the company, as an individual, how much responsibility do I have? I know you want to go after the companies, but it's really the individuals who are going to be taking advantage of this.
Right. The companies have, through their technology, are providing messaging to their users. I know that some of these companies are also requiring that the user take a photograph of the scooter, where they left it, where they parked it, to ensure that they are following proper procedures as outlined by the city. We know that some of the efforts and steps that are being taken by the companies have worked in other cities to ensure that the users are doing the right thing. And so we are, again, testing these concepts, trying to determine whether the strong requirements that we've imposed in this pilot are actually going to work. And so that is, we're using some of the best practices that have already been implemented in other cities to see if those kinds of requirements work here, specifically when the company is informing the user of the proper utilization of the scooter. And so we're working with the companies on that. Public awareness becomes really important in a new project like this one. So we're encouraging the consumers to work with those companies, but we're not just relying on the companies. We, the city, are launching our own public awareness campaign so that we can tell the users and the consumers what they should be, the do's and don'ts, right? What they should and shouldn't be doing.
Rosa, is the theory that they're going to all hit the bike lanes, all the scooters, or are they on the streets, or are they on the sidewalks, or where do they go? What's okay?
Again, it is important that the users know, and our public awareness campaign will highlight this, is that they can be anywhere where bikes can be. They can operate on the bike lanes, and that they should not. They're completely prohibited from operating on the sidewalk.
I hope so.
Yep.
Yeah,
do they go through red lights too, just like the bikes, all the stop signs?
You know, this is again consumer beware. Consumer, use your common sense. Rules of the road apply when you are on the street. It is so important. Use of helmet, so important. And so this is the kind of information, and thank you guys for actually having us using this as a platform to remind the residents that it's really important that they follow safety, rules of the road, use your helmet. All those things are so key to ensuring the safety of everyone on the road.
Yeah. You're not going to thank us by the time this is over. I what is the city getting out of this? I don't understand what the upside is for Chicago.
Do we tax this?
Well, you know, there are, yes, and we are also imposing a fee for each scooter that is on the road. There's a permit. There's a cost of $250 for each company in terms of the permit, but then there is a cost per scooter that will be on the road. And yes, there is, there's mobility options that we want to test. So, for example, any time that we can take a vehicle off the road and provide our residents other options of transportation, that not only increases options for our residents to have other ways of mobility across the city, but anytime you take a vehicle off the road, the safety improves, and also the carbons in our city, all of the environmental benefits are there.
Well, these are electric? What are these?
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay, all right. But they go up to like 30 miles an hour?
They are capped at 15 miles per hour
15,
on the road.
15.
One five.
5-0. 1-5. Yeah, because 50. I just have an image, and I see this happen every once in a while with the divvy. and as I like to refer to people who get lost on their divvies, divviets that I see at times on Lakeshore Drive.
Right,
let me just give you a little example, Rosa. You know, downtown, yeah. Lakeshore Drive, you get on Michigan Avenue, right? You get on Lakeshore Drive at Oak Street. You know, the people, there's the outer drive and the inner drive. And if, you know, if you're not really familiar with the area, it can be very confusing, I think, for some people. So northbound, right? And all of a sudden you get somebody on a divvy and they're like, oh, I want to go out to the beach. And then they go on to Lakeshore Drive, onto the outer drive, underneath. Oh, it's a tunnel. Look at this. It's fun. And then all of a sudden the traffic comes at you, including the 153, you know, the 147 bus and the whole thing. And then they're all freaked out. And then they're pedaling on Lakeshore Drive. I can imagine that there will be people, because they're on a scooter, are going to think, well, I could do this because it's 15 miles an hour, when the traffic on Lakeshore Drive is 40 miles an hour. And you can't.
I think you should be working on our public awareness campaign, because a
you don't want
things.
That.
Number one, well, maybe not, but let me just say this. Number one is they are not going east of Halsted. That's number
right.
one. We
yeah.
don't want
yes.
them in
Correct.
Congested areas.
Yes.
Number two is that's why it's so important that people must know the rules of the road.
Rules of the road.
When we're driving on the road, there are plenty of signs that tell you where to go, where to turn, where not to turn. And so people need to be mindful. They are on the road, and they need to be mindful of the rules of the road.
That's the funny thing here, is that you don't need a license for this, right? You can just get one of these scooters. It's like the same thing with a divvy bike. You don't have to have a license for that. And I think there's a lot of people who don't understand that. Most bicyclists don't understand the rules of the road. They figure the red light is optional and this and that. They can, you know, especially the people who are down here, you know, the delivery people and stuff like that are on their bikes. It's the Wild West. Let's just be honest. And I'm glad that you are geofencing. I'm glad that this is a pilot program that just is very specific
Makes
areas.
Sense.
So let's explain again where this is. It's west of Halsted and south of Irving, right?
It's south of Irving, and also the river is also a border on the
river.
North, and on the south is the river.
On the south,
I would say generally like Ogden-ish area on the south. And this is the reason why we designated that area. Is we have very diverse neighborhoods, and this is an area where divvy isn't going next, right? Divvy is expanding south. Divvy is already in the east side and throughout the city. Mm-hmm. And this is an area where we felt that we wanted to test this. Also, a very important part of our pilot, and we're very proud of this, is that we are forcing the companies to rebalance or to start all 50% of the scooters west of Kedzie, in some areas west of Pulaski, because we want our residents on the west side of Chicago to be able to test these as a concept to get from first mile, last mile. So if they need to get to the train station, if they need to go to the bus station, these could be additional modes that can help them get to where they need to go. They need to go to work. And these are quick, easy ways that they can test. And we also want to test whether there is an opportunity to expand transportation option in these areas.
We just had a listener call in. She's blind. She says, do they make a sound or something so that you know they're coming, or that you can sort of hear that they're around you?
Yes, so they're all required to have a bell. They're all required to have lighting, and for the evening. And so yes, they're all. And we also within our pilot have requirements for accessible scooters. And so the different companies are to provide their accessible plan to us, as well as ensure that they have the device that will ring and ensure that people.
So accessible scooter like those things at Walmart. Like that kind of an access, like a three-wheeled scooter, like a...
Yes, okay. Yes. We're actually, we do want that. We, as part of one of the groups that we sat down with is our accessible community was part of our engagement, and they provided feedback, and so we built that into this pilot.
So I'm a little confused, though. So you get on, you have an app. Right.
Yes.
We got to do this as a show. We should all go out one night and scooter home.
We have to find our. Well, we can't because,
can. I can.
Yeah.
Sort
you're
of.
The only one west of Halsted.
Why don't you visit the west side? You don't have to go home. Just go out and visit the west side.
Trust me. You don't want to know where I visit on the west side. So the question is, I got the app and then I say, OK, find one of these scooters near me. right? And then I go and I find the scooter where I have to walk to the scooter to find the scooter. Then I get on the scooter, and it could be anywhere. It would be, I mean, theoretically, it would be parked on a street in a proper parking area. And then I go and I get on the scooter, and then I drive it to wherever I want to drive it, and then I leave it there.
Right. As there's no to, like, docking at no, all.
Right. Not like a Divvy
no,
thing.
Yeah. You don't find them in little docking stations. They're okay. just there. And your app tells you where it is.
Okay. And it might be close, but... Go ahead.
And just remember, you could leave it anywhere where you today would leave your own personal bike. Would you leave it in the middle of the sidewalk? No, you wouldn't. You would, you know, put it in a location, you know, by the pole, and you mm-hmm. would secure it, right? And so these would be, the idea is to place them anywhere where a bike would be allowed to be placed and parked.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to trust that you. That's your rule.
Want you to be
that's
part
the
of
rule.
Our pilot.
Okay. I'll be part of you. You know what? I got to get a helmet. I'm going to wear a Bears helmet for it. But I got the whole thing worked out. All right, Rosa. You've been a very good sport.
Yes.
Let's just see how this works. And it starts this weekend, right?
It starts on. We're launching on the 15th. Yes, the companies are to provide us different locations throughout the city where they're going to be launching from. So, to our consumers, we ask you to visit the City of Chicago website. We will be distributing flyers on the do's and don'ts. We're happy to get you guys those flyers so that you can communicate to the audience. Because, like you said, no, there is no driver's license required,
yeah,
but people should
yeah.
know the rules of the road yeah, and yeah. the do's and don'ts.
Okay, that's good. Okay, Rosa, we will talk to you next week as my guest.
We're going to need you.
God. I hope this is not going to be a weekly call.
We'll find out. If things go well this weekend, we'll talk to you. If things don't go well this weekend, we'll talk to you, too.
I'm always open to a discussion. Thank you guys so
Thanks.
Much for bringing attention to this and the public safety side of things.
Thank
you so much.
I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, Rosa Escareno, who's the commissioner of business affairs and public, you know, biking.
I'm so scared. I know.
Oh, this is going to be... I know that, you know, the best laid plans.
Yeah.
Right? And the road to hell, paved with good intentions here.
Well, paved with scooters.
A big thing with bicyclists is that they don't stop at stoplights because it takes extra energy. They have to brake and then they have to use their legs to power up again. Now, with these, you don't have to do that. You just have, you know, the accelerator and decelerator.
Yeah,
whatever.
Okay. All right. Stop trying to make excuses. There is going to be I'm afraid to say that there is going to be a mass casualty event associated with this. Is going to take these things away.
Yeah,
we are not responsible enough. This is like going to the worst classroom in America and saying, "I'm going to give you lawn darts and you guys go out and play with them." That is what this is like. I don't see this ending well. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN, and it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
And it's 5 o'clock here.
Oh, that's right.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Well, if you insist.
Number 5.
Okay. a rather bizarre moment at the press pool today at the White House. The president gushed over his relationship with Kim Jong-un. Oh, we're back at that now. Because there was a report that the half-brother of Kim Jong-un, who got mm-hmm. murdered
yep.
2 years ago, was a CIA asset.
How about that story?
So the president said, oh, Kim Jong-un, Mr. Dictator, we would never use the CIA or any of people around you to spy on you.
I just received a beautiful letter from Kim Jong-un, and I think the relationship is very well, but I appreciated the letter. I saw the information about the CIA with respect to his brother or half-brother, and I would tell him that would not happen under my auspices, that's for sure. I wouldn't let that happen under my auspices. But I just received a beautiful letter from Kim Jong-un. I can't show you the letter, obviously, but it was a very personal, very warm, very nice letter. I appreciate it.
Very warm, very nice letter.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
I'm a brutal dictator.
Just imagine this. I don't know. It was like... What? Wait, there's more? There can't be more.
And I'll say it again. I think that North Korea has tremendous potential, and he'll be there. I think that North Korea, under his leadership, but North Korea, because of what it represents, the people are great, the land is great, the location is incredible between Russia, China, and South Korea. I think North Korea has tremendous potential. And the one that feels that more than anybody is Kim Jong-un. He gets it.
Uh-huh.
He sent him a nice warm letter.
Yeah. All right. Does he actually think that Kim Jong-un is stupid enough to buy into this? There's no, you know, that's one thing. You say that to Kim Jong-un. You want to say all those things? Say that to Kim Jong-un on the phone. And when asked the question about North Korea, just say, you know, I'm going to leave that up to the diplomats. And then, you know, or, you know, we're working on a relationship. I wouldn't go gushing publicly about what a great guy Kim Jong-un is since he murdered half of the staff that was at the last summit.
Right.
I mean, this is not that. It makes no sense. These are, again, these like unforced errors out of nowhere. He doesn't have to answer that question. And he certainly doesn't have to answer that question, which is with one of the stupidest answers in the history of the United States presidency. Beautiful letter. Love the guy.
Gushing.
I'm never going to listen under my auspices. I'm never going to use spies against him. Okay, call him and tell him that. Don't say that publicly, because A, no one believes it. I mean, I don't know if you're using it or not, but the CIA does this stuff autonomously. The president doesn't get to tell the CIA exactly what to do when it does what it does. He could, theoretically, but no president has. And I really kind of doubt that that Donald Trump is going to call the CIA and say, you know what, stop spying on North Korea. Because don't you think we want to know what's going on there? He's a nuclear state! Well, oh, my God!
It's a kiss-up, is what it is.
I know it's a kiss-up, but it's a dumb kiss-up. You don't have to kiss up publicly, because you make yourself look like a tool. More so. All right. I mean, come on. Come on. Come on. Even if you love everything that's going on here. Maybe you do. Yeah, not... See, this is where I just... Please, just tell me you think that's a stupid thing for him.
Of course, a stupid thing. What I love is all the candidates for president from the Democratic side running to take this as an opportunity. Pete Buttigieg, you will not see me exchanging love letters on White House letterhead with a brutal dictator. Oh, really?
Right.
Such a high bar.
Right. It was like Mussolini got a lovely letter from him.
I know, right.
He's got a hot wife. I mean, come on, shut up! All right. You're representing us. You're representing me, pal. Don't do that. Oh.
Number four.
John Stewart is upset.
He is.
And for good reason. Survivors and first responders who continue to suffer the after effects of 9/11, they are not getting the support that they were promised.
Behind me, a filled room of 9/11 first responders. And in front of me, a nearly empty Congress. Sick and dying, they brought themselves down here to speak to no one. Shameful. It's an embarrassment to the country, and it is a stain on this institution. And you should be ashamed of yourselves for those that aren't here, but you won't be, because accountability doesn't appear to be something that occurs in this chamber.
That's the House Judiciary Committee that he was sitting in front of.
I don't understand why they weren't there. Was there something else big going on? I mean, why would you not be there when that many first responders are sitting there?
So what he's looking for is an extension of the 911 Victim Compensation Fund, since it is currently on track, listen to this, to expire in 2020. So back in 2002, right, when they were putting this together, they're like, oh, well, 2020, it'll be fine by then. Is it?
Your indifference cost these men and women their most valuable commodity. Time. It's the one thing they're running out of. This should be flipped. This hearing should be flipped. These men and women should be up on that stage, and Congress should be down here answering their questions as to why this is so damn hard and takes so damn long, and why no matter what they get, something's always pulled back, and they got to come back.
I guess lawmakers on both sides do support the bill, so it's likely going to pass. And then one representative said that they, a lot of them were in and out of subcommittee hearings, so that they meant no disrespect, but they just
bad move. Still
right,
bad
you
move.
See that many first responders, I would think you want to be there.
Everybody's a moron in Washington, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, look at this. You got, you know.
Plenty of examples of moronery.
Yeah. You got the guy running the country telling us about Kim Jong-un, beautiful man, lovely letter, love him, not going to spy on him. And then you got congressmen going, well, I'll get to that meeting with the people, the first responders who tried to save the world and the days following September 11th who were dying of the most horrifying diseases as a result of their service, and they and their families not being properly taken care of. It is absolutely, and John Stewart's 100% right about this. So there you go. There's your look at Washington. All right.
Sight.
We'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, let's check in, Jen, what's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour.
Nurses at the University of Chicago Medical Center are saying conditions are unsafe for workers and patients.
Top 5-5 continues.
And first, we've got this. Rizzo, Arenado, the Cubs hit Mile High for a date with the Rockies. No. Tonight at 7:30 on WGN TV Sports.
We're going to be out at the White Sox game tonight.
Woo-hoo!
Taking in the sights.
Can be Scooter there on an e-scooter?
I will not be e-scootering. It is west of Halstead, and I will not be east. No, it's east of Halstead, actually.
Too bad. Otherwise, we'd take
an e-scooter. No, that doesn't work.
Darn it.
The hell?
We got to plan a show outing west of Halstead.
An e-scooter?
After Saturday, I guess.
What do you think about three of us going around an architectural tour of West Garfield Park together?
Perfect.
All of us on scooters?
Just racing through the streets.
Yeah. We'll be racing through the streets. All right.
People pointed out in a lot of these neighborhoods there aren't many bike paths, so I don't know where you fit the scooter on the street.
Yeah. There's going to be
a couple problems.
Yeah,
I'm going to anticipate.
I anticipate that this program will be canceled within 2 weeks of starting. Starts on the 15th. I'd say by July 1st, program suspended. All right, here we go. We're continuing the top 5 of 5 and
number 3.
Steph Curry spoke to reporters last night, very excited that Golden State Warriors stayed alive, but disappointed in the fans in Toronto who applauded the injury to the Warriors' Kevin Durant.
Very confused around that reaction. I commend obviously Danny Green and Kyle Lowry especially. I think they were the ones that were kind of signaling to the crowd like, Let's check ourselves a little bit and understand that this is about an individual and a human being and not, oh, shoot, he's out, he's hurt, we won the championship. Like, that was probably their initial thought. And you hate to see that when a guy's going, you know, through pain like that. So, again, that's not my experience with this city. And I just hope that ugliness doesn't show itself again as we go forward in the series.
Yeah.
How about it?
Oh, man. That was
from Canadians.
I know.
Let's remind everyone. The last people you'd expect it from.
I know.
Really?
That was crazy. Oh, sorry. Oh, we did. Oh, no, this isn't hockey. Oh, okay.
Guy down groveling in pain. We're going to applaud? Yay, he's out of the game. Yay, he's so hurt. He probably will be out all season.
I told you it wasn't hockey.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Oh,
I told you we shouldn't be applauding
this.
We like it when there's blood on the ice, but this is a court, you know. You know, you can tell it's not hockey because there's
no ice.
There's no ice and there's black guys on there.
Very different sport.
I don't like to hear the fans cheering.
I'm surprised by that, and the players are telling them not to be doing that.
No question. To cheer for a player who gets injured.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
Okay. On behalf of Toronto, so sorry.
I want Drake to personally apologize. Actually, he's on the other side, so he's okay. He's Canadian, right?
Yeah, he's Canadian. And he said, you know, he was trying to support what was going on there.
Oh.
Like, you know, the positive vibe.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number 2.
All right. Radiohead. When music pirates go low, Radiohead goes high. So here's what happened. According to the front man for Radiohead, they had to announce on Twitter that they got hacked. Someone stole Thom Yorke's mini disc archive from around the time of OK Computer. And now these guys are asking for $150,000 in ransom to get the mini disc back, or they would put all of the songs up on the web. So what did they do? Radiohead decided we're just going to release it ourselves.
Girl, get away. I'm no good. I am poisonly.
Take that, hackers.
I'm going to download it just because.
What if we find out the hackers are Canadians too?
I bet they are.
Now we're going to be at war with Canada.
There's a theme.
There's something very bad happening here.
When Canadians go bad, we
Kim Jong Un good,
number
Canada bad.
One.
Sorry, Orion. 9-year-old California boy used his allowance to pay off his fellow classmates' outstanding lunch debts. See, now there is something. Cooking and mealtime are important to Ryan Kirkpatrick's family, and after a discussion with his mom about some students not being able to afford school lunches, Ryan decided he wanted to help. He asked his mom to find out how much money his fellow third graders at Napa's Park Elementary School owed in lunch debt. So his mom, Kyle, emailed the school to inquire.
I think $74.50. So I took that email and came to Ryan and said, what do you want to do? And he said, I guess I can pay for it. And I said, are you sure? He said, yes.
I want them just to realize people actually think about them instead of just telling them what they did, because you're just bragging about stuff. So I want them to feel happy that someone actually cares about them.
It's very sweet.
Aww, why can't the school care enough about them to just cover it?
Because that's not how the school operates. And you notice the other person who agreed with the school was the dog. Because you notice, like, the mom's
dog
like, okay, we'll do it. The dog's like, hey, wait a second. Is that coming out of my end?
I think we should send that California boy to Canada. Explain manners.
Oh,
he's
man.
Needed there.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a lovely story. See,
it is a beautiful story.
We did a nice thing there.
I love that.
We started with the ugly and we ended with the beautiful. Real empathy. Here we go. People doing the right thing.
It happens.
The top five at five.
I just received a beautiful letter from Kim Jong-un, and I think the relationship is very well, but I appreciated the letter. I saw the information about the CIA with respect to his brother or half-brother, and I would tell him that would not happen under my auspices, that's for sure. I wouldn't let that happen under my auspices. But I just received a beautiful letter from Kim Jong-un. I can't show you the letter, obviously, but it was a very personal, very warm, very nice letter. I appreciate it.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Beautiful letter. Very warm.
A.B. Stoddard joins us. A.B.? I ask you, and I'm gonna remain calm when I ask you this. Has there ever been an American president speaking of an international pariah dictator and saying, "Listen, I told the CIA, don't spy on him anymore. Don't worry about it. It's all okay."
It would never be cool with him.
No, no, no. Oh my God! Oh my God!
I also love that it was one thing when he talked about the beautiful friendship and the beautiful letters and all the specialness before he resumed testing. But now that he's resumed testing, Trump is trying to tell us that it's cool because it's short range, not long range. So that's totally cool. While his national security advisor on the same day is saying, no, of course they've broken the pledges that they have made. And once again, we have two people telling us different things about the same dictator. And there's a word for that, and it's Tuesday.
Okay, so I and I said this earlier. I just want to make this perfectly clear. I don't think that this is an unfair criticism of the president, despite how ferocious the Twitter and all the rest of it will be for me doing this. But I think it's fair that the president doesn't have to answer that question publicly. If he wants to call up Kim Jong-un and try and con him into thinking that he's not going to use the CIA and that it's totally fine and thank you very much for the letter, that's one thing. To do it publicly in front of the world, because the world gets what Kim Jong-un is. Everybody gets. Vladimir Putin says Kim Jong-un's, that's a bad guy right there, right? I mean, that's, everybody gets what's going on. He kills, he starves, he murders his own people, his own family, just to maintain the power source, you know, the power centric around him, right? That's what he does. So I don't think that's the way the family's done business, basically. You know, Korea, doing business the same way for 75 years, right? North Korea. This is not a good situation. And for the president to publicly say this makes the president look like a moron. Makes him look like a tool.
But that's the thing. He's beyond embarrassment. He promised us we were out of a nuclear threat with North Korea. He said things are going to be sealed up. The second summit, that came and went. Kim's in a catbird seat. He's got trade restrictions pulled back from the Chinese, the Russians. He's on the world stage. He's no longer hermited. He's no longer a pariah. And he started resuming testing, and he's got Trump saying that's no problem. And then calling the letters beautiful, saying I'm still swooning.
Yeah.
And I'm still being had. But at the same time, one more time trashing our intelligence community and our intelligence operations that are there to keep us safe. He's had no problem doing this. It's been consistent.
We should not spy on a pariah nuclear state. I don't think we should do that anymore, AB. I think it's a good idea to just pull out the spies. Hey, that's it. You know what? Bring them back here. We'll execute them. Don't worry about it. We got it, Kim. Oh, my God. What a... I mean, I can't believe I wake up to this crap every day. All right. I want to... You wrote a piece, and I think this is very fascinating. And I would like to... Let's do a little rhetorical battle here. You wrote a piece about Mitch McConnell, maybe at his political wit's end with Donald Trump. And that's probably not going to be good for Donald Trump in the long run here. But doesn't Mitch McConnell have to get through an election here? Couldn't Donald Trump primary Mitch McConnell if he got mad at him, and probably in Kentucky beat him?
Oh, I mean, I'm assuming that I'm talking about a time when enough of the people up in cycle get through their primaries, and they're going to have different primary dates. We're talking about McConnell in Kentucky, who's probably safe, but certainly swing states like Iowa, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and possibly Texas, where the Trump trade war is really upsetting the incumbents and making things problematic for them. If they get to their primaries, to get to through the general election next year. And so the thing is that if you watch what's happened since the midterms, and it's been all since December that the president shut the government down, threatened declared a national emergency, threatened to shut the border down, and now is on to the tariffs with Mexico. They're on the side of the Chamber of Commerce. They're not on the president's side, as we know from this last week, on threatening tariffs on Mexico. They're very worried there's no China deal. They're very worried there will be no new NAFTA, the USMCA, which they believe must be passed by August before everyone leaves for recess and are officially in, you know, what you would... Basically, they have to come back and do all the funding fights, the big, you know, rattle global markets over the debt ceiling. All of that excitement happens by
the real business of government. I mean, without
right,
I don't
right.
Think,
the
without
only
getting in the wheel,
they ever do.
Right.
And then they're technically in like an election campaign, non-legislative calendar mode. So they really don't think they're going to get the USMCA. If you ask them privately, they're very doubtful about it. They don't, as I said, think a deal was coming to China, and they are very convinced. Oh, from the last week that Trump will definitely use the tariff threat again with Mexico. So there's going to be a point at which they have to cut bait on the issue of trade and just sort of generally if his poll numbers are mired in the toilet and it's next summer and you're still seeing Biden beats Trump numbers in Texas.
for example.
Crazy.
Like, we're seeing that today. Quinnipiac is 53 for Biden, 40 for Trump, right, if the election were held today.
Because my argument about McConnell is he'd rather be majority leader with a Democratic president than minority leader under Trump. Yeah. Mm-hmm. His intention is to be majority leader. Let's that comes first.
AB, bring us up to speed on sort of the pressure within growing within the Democrats about impeachment, about how to proceed with this idea, this agenda of going after the president's documents and you know, bringing witnesses forward and potentially doing a full blown impeachment inquiry. It just seems like Speaker Pelosi is finding more and more opposition to her policy to not take that route, a stronger route. And I wonder what will happen there.
Yeah, it really is increasingly a mess because the story remains now the rift in the Democratic caucus, the fight, the brewing argument and tension between Jerry Nadler, the Judiciary Committee chairman, and the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and their big disagreement. It is true the numbers have grown. They are not critical mass. They are just more noisy. But you could see today in an interview she gave one-on-one at the fiscal summit in D.C. that she doesn't even believe, she's not even bought in yet to the argument that an official impeachment inquiry gives you more leverage with the courts. I mean, she is not buying in on any, she's not even remotely tempted, is the way to put it in layman's terms. Mm-hmm. And so I really see, I see the argument about why it's the right thing to do, and you don't actually let this kind of obstructive conduct, go unanswered when you're a separate and co-equal branch. But at the same time, she's really seeing sort of the larger attempt to follow every wrong, allegation of wrongdoing, try to get every witness, try to request every document as the better way to sort of build the case that he's been unethical and potentially he's been involved in criminal conduct. The problem is they had a hearing yesterday, as you know, with two expert witnesses who are prosecutors about obstructive conduct, about what's in the Mueller report that's considered obstruction of justice, and of course John Dean, and the MSNBC and CNN carried, this tragic helicopter accident in New York, and so, very few people have watched it. They're trying to tell this story without the people they need. And that's Bob Mueller, and that's Don McGahn,
right,
and Hope Hicks, and on and on. And so they really are paralyzed. It is the story now every day is about their paralysis, and they sort of have to come to a decision and move on, because it really is a story of sort of conflict and like I said, they're kind of this paralysis, and I just could hear in her voice today that she's not budging. And I guess, yes, the conference could proceed without her if they got to critical mass. They're not there yet.
Yeah.
I suspect this fight is going to go on for a while and be the headline of the news, whereas right, if they just shut up about it and said, okay, American people, today is the day that we were once again blockaded on a document request and plotted through, it would probably, be a better way to get to the truth and not die on the political vine here. But it's a mess.
AB, it does seem to me that you've got a bunch of cooks in the kitchen here, and everybody's got a little bit of their own agenda. There's their own skin in the game, their own money. There was a group that put a commercial up that actually ran on Fox News Channel that talked about that it was a commercial that lauded 35 years ago Republicans in Congress who stood up against Richard Nixon, and obviously bringing John Dean in was a bit of a stunt to do that as well, to remind people that there were Republicans in 1974 that stood up and said, yes, we are going to go forward with the impeachment of the president of the United States. And that's when Nixon gave in. You would not have that happen now. So that's the difference. Nixon was, despite the fact he was a crook, he was an honorable servant to the American people who had served in the Navy and was, had been a senator, a congressman, a senator. He was a guy that understood how government worked and did actually could be shamed into leaving. That does not appear to be the case. The president would not. Donald Trump is not that kind of a guy. He's not going to do that. So it would be. It's a different world here. They're not. The impeachment route here is not for this cycle. If They have to what Democrats and I think willing Republicans have to do is make an argument for what they want America to be, how they want the politics may never be the same because of social media and silos and all that stuff. It may never be, but this kind of thing, today, I mean, every day, there's someone you point to. Today, it's Kim Jong-un's a beautiful guy, wrote me a beautiful letter. I love him. This is not a repeat, by the way. This actually happened today, on the 11th of June in 2019. The president stood on the lawn of the White House and showed us a piece of paper, said, this is a letter from Kim Jong-un. He's a great guy. He's lovely. And by the way, I heard all this stuff about that we used his half-brother as a CIA asset. That would never happen under me. I'd never spy on you, pal. I mean, I get it. I mean, most people go, well, he's got to say that. No, he doesn't. He can call Kim Jong-un and say it to him on the phone. He doesn't have to stand on the White House lawn that we're paying for. My taxes pay for that lawn to get mowed. He doesn't have to say that to the American people. He doesn't have to insult the intelligence community. He doesn't have to insult our intelligence. He doesn't have to make himself look like a total tool by doing it. He could act presidential. He could do it, and he's not doing
it. No, he could not.
No, but the point is,
come on.
That's
the
where
thing I'm going to disagree with you on. He doesn't intend to. He's not capable. He never will. It's not. Right. It's not possible.
And I know that Democrats don't want a Republican the Republicans don't want a Democratic president. I get that. Okay. But then maybe come up with a guy who isn't doing that. You know, that would be a step in the right direction. That's where Republicans who privately, we've talked about this a million times, and this was in one of these stories. Republicans today, you know, you talk to Republicans, I talk to Republicans. Congressmen, senators, and they will tell you, oh, man, I can't believe he just did that. But they won't say that publicly. They don't stand up.
No, and that's why the Republicans for the rule of law thing, those are Bill Kristol's groups running there. And I think it's hilarious that they run them on Fox and Friends, which mm-hmm. the president watches, those ads.
Right.
But basically, yeah, they're basically saying this is when Republicans had shame. And you guys obviously don't because you refuse to read the Mueller report. Bill Kristol's group, Republicans for the Rule of Law, sent the Mueller report with highlighted portions to every Republican office except for Justin Amash's because they're not reading the report so they can have plausible deniability or whatever. And it is, we're just at a place where it doesn't matter what they say. The only thing when we talked last week, the only thing they've spoken out on that we can remember is they want us to know they're actual free traders. They don't want the border to be shut, and they didn't want Herman Cain to be on the Fed. I mean, it's just bizarre, but they really, I mean, on 98% of what Trump does, calling Nancy Pelosi, I can't even remember the things he said. They were horrible. With the graves at Normandy behind him, Mueller a fool, making up something about Mueller, like out of whole cloth. I mean, there's so many things he's done just in the last week that are so unacceptable by anybody's standards, but none of these people will ever say it's time for President Pence. None of them.
They should. You know who's saying? You know who did the love it, Mike? Yeah. You know what? That's right. It's time for me. Yeah, right. I would take Mike Pence right now. I would take Mike Pence in a heartbeat. If they said in 2020,
Mike Pence would confront the Russians. He wouldn't lie all day. He wouldn't be profiting off the presidency.
Right.
He wouldn't have nepotism in his government. I could go on for the next half an hour.
Well, we don't have time. Thank you, AB.
Thanks,
appreciate it. AB, sorry.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye. Oh God. You know what? I'll make that deal right now. That's what I'm willing to say. I'll take Mike Pence right now. We can cancel the 2020 election. Mike Pence is president of the United States.
Really?
Donald Trump steps out. Fine. We're done. We're good. I'm good to go. Fine. Take that deal. And you know what? 99% of American voters. Well, no. No.
Mm-mm.
I would say that 70% of Republicans would take that. There's still 30% of Republicans out there that just love this chaos. Oh, man. All right. Hold on. I'll come back on the other side. I'm having a little bit of a nervous breakdown, I think. Hey, you know what we need to do right here?
What do we have to do?
Hold on. Where's Jen? Come back.
Jen, go
back to your microphone.
Where are you going?
Don't walk away in a moment like this.
It's very important. Okay.
We're about to tributize you.
With the Crazy Train song?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It is. This is not my intent, but this is your birthday today, is it not?
It is my birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much. You know what I just got for my birthday? I just found out from my husband. A very expensive vet bill because the puppy hasn't been eating and she just went to the vet ER.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So,
not a good one.
No fancy dinner for you guys now.
Not for like 2 months.
Okay. So. Is that bad?
Oh. And no, no.
Ouch.
No. It'll be okay. She'll be okay. Everybody will be okay. But, you know, puppies eat everything.
Yes. What did she eat?
We don't know. Just something that, you know, destroyed her insides and now she's on a special diet for the next couple of weeks. Oh, yay.
Do you have to, like, feed her? Like, through a tube or anything? Or what kind of diet?
I don't... You know, I just got a picture of the... I think it's dry food still. Just a bland diet or something like that.
We'll check in on this. I had a dog eat... like 3 pounds of lava rocks and survive it.
Oh, wow.
Still don't know how that happened. But went all the way through. And I got to just tell you something. It was, you know, pooping charcoal is kind of a good way to go if you want to know the truth.
Well, like, since we're on this topic right now about dogs, you know, if I can't find anybody to babysit her tomorrow and she still needs to be monitored.
I got the thing, but yes.
She's adorable.
You
guys want
her back again?
Adorable.
Yes, bring in the puppy.
Yeah, we have a few sound booths we can let her sleep in.
Oh, yeah, if you want to bring her to work, yeah. Tomorrow night I got that thing.
What is she again? Is she a corgi mix?
She's a Cardigan Welsh corgi.
Oh.
Yeah, and she's got the blue mauve jeans, so she's gray and spunky.
All right.
Anyways, thank you guys very much.
Yes. Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday,
John. All right. Speaking of people who are on the broadcastings, I want to say this story, it just is crazy. It just tells you what's happening in the business of local television news and national news and things like that. That because of the technological impact and there's, audiences get smaller and smaller and more specific to whatever it is, right? Like social media. We're just big versions of social media now, essentially, is what we've become. So as opposed to trying to serve the mass, there are some companies that just want to serve the scared, right? And that is where Sinclair Broadcasting comes in. That's a very large local television station operator. They own a bunch of smaller market stations around the country, couple medium-sized markets. Our own Lauren Lapko worked for them. And there are a number of people who have actually worked for them that have gone through here. And they own a station down in Springfield. They own a couple stations down in Springfield. And there was a meteorologist down there that took a stand, very much like Lauren took when she was working in Eugene, Oregon. For them in Eugene, Oregon, and people may remember this moment that Sinclair asked all of their anchors to read the same script about fake news and that they were not going to take part in fake news. It was parroting very much of what the president was saying at the time, because Sinclair has made no secret out of letting their audience know that they support the president of the United States and that they support what he stands for and that they do not, they're not going to take part in like cheap shotting the president like all these other organizations are doing. And there were a lot of journalists who were working at Sinclair. People actually went to school and worked professionally and make their living being people who tell the truth. Lauren was one of them, and Lauren chose not to read that script. She was one of the very few anchors, and I think there were thousands of anchors at Sinclair, right? They had hundreds of stations, so there were over close to 2,000 anchors that were working there. Everybody did do it, except for she and her co-anchor, and I think there might have been one or two in other markets.
A handful, you're right, but I give you all the credit in the world, Lauren, for doing that, because it takes, it's your employer, and you know sometimes there are consequences when you try to face off and say no to something that's being mandated, because it was mandated across all of the stations nationwide.
I'm pretty sure my stomach ate itself after that whole month. I'm surprised I'm alive. But yeah, it's scary, especially in our business being under contracts. That makes things a lot more difficult.
Right. Because they can hold you to, they were telling you to do this and you got to go do it, even though you know it's not journalism. That's not what they're paying you to go do. It is propaganda. When we cross that line, when we're saying something that, and it's a little different for this show and for talk radio, because we're always, it's always about our opinions, right? But in the news business, it isn't about opinions, it's about fact. And we are now in a crisis of fact in America. So the one of the more recent things that Sinclair did is that they were asking all of their weather people to announce code red weather 3 times a week, whether you have it or not. I don't know how you do that in San Diego, but you have to have code red weather. Code red weather. So there's a guy down in Springfield who's been working there forever. TV meteorologist down there. He's got the AMS seal. He, you know, did that program that a lot of meteorologists, I've never been able to say that, weather people have taken, and they get that AMS seal. You see it on the bottom of the screen.
Right.
And that means something. That means that they've actually, they're trained, and they know what's coming at you, and they know that it's better that they, that you, you'll learn things from them that could potentially save your life. But if you're told to say code red every 3 days, whether you need it or not,
sensationalize.
Right. And you're endangering people, because people will stop believing you as the weather person. So Joe Crane took a stand.
I don't take myself very seriously, but I do take my job seriously and my responsibility to the public. So we want you to know it's not us. This is a corporate initiative, the Code Red Alert. And behind the scenes, many of us have tried to dissuade it for the last few months to try something else that's less controversial to the viewers. And it continues to be controversial based on all the social media that continues to this day. So keep in mind, despite the fact that this facility is owned by a corporation, it's still licensed under the authority by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. So you still have a voice. Keep those cards and letters coming.
Mr. Crane was taken off the air after he said that.
And they pulled his bio from the website. Seems like they're saying goodbye to him for taking that type of a stand, which is really in the viewer's best interest, the public's best interest, to say we're not going to scare you with these random code red situations when there isn't a code red weather situation. We're going to tell you what the weather is, and we're going to let you know when it's time to be on your guard or be cautious. And then we're not going to alarm you when that's not the case. It just seems he's being so responsible.
Oh, no, we can't have that anymore. So what they've done, actually, is this particular TV station, there are stations down in Springfield, are going to weather worn, I guess is the new term that they're going to use. That's, you know what, I don't have a problem with weather worn. It's, you know, that seems benign enough, that seems general enough. To call it code red, when you see code red, you think there's imminent danger.
Sure.
If you're told over and over and over again there's code red and there isn't, when do you believe in the imminent danger that may be one out of every five storms down there? And you got to remember, we're in Tornado Alley. This is life or death in central Illinois.
Yeah, code red sounds like it's a nuclear-powered tornado.
Right. Like it's something very, like you know, you are truly in danger. Now, what I know what Sinclair executives said about this was that the time he was referring to code red, there were some power lines that went down in that storm. Well, there are power lines that go down in every storm. That does not make for a code red. A code red, it seems, to just the, as the consumer in this case, I would say a code red would be tornado warning, not tornado watch even, tornado warning. And so that, it just seemed unfair. It's trickery. And it is appealing to low information viewers and people who scare easily or who like to be scared.
It is the weather version of the terror alert desk that they use as well.
Right. They were doing that, and I think they're still doing it.
They do.
They were doing it on their TV stations that it was demanded that they go to the terror alert desk Omaha, right? I mean, it's sort of like terror alert.
They will find any type of terror-related story to report on to make it seem like terrorism is still a huge, 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 huge problem.
I have a question.
International terrorism, not even domestic terrorism.
Right.
Is that something that's dictated by each station, or is that like a corporate, this is going on the terror alert today?
Well, I don't know if you can answer that question, but
it's from what I know, it's a NBC-specific Sinclair station thing.
Okay.
That was your experience?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That is, it's it's company wide that they do that.
Mm-hmm.
They also take these other, these commentaries too from a former Trump, you know, campaign guy, Boris Epstein.
Yeah, those are on CBS.
And
but
they,
the Code Red brand definitely came from the broadcast, from the Sinclair Broadcast Group, and it was company wide. Now, because of this weatherman taking a stand and people feeling for him because they thought he was being responsible, you saw businesses start pulling their local advertising off the station, and the general manager has been forced to respond to it all. And he says, well, I can't comment on his status. That doesn't sound good. But that we are going to change it to weather worn.
Right. It is unfair for that guy who's a respected television meteorologist in Central Illinois, a very important job.
Very important job.
Very important job. It is unfair for that guy to lose his job for standing up for what's right. And I hope that they reverse that decision. I doubt they will, but they should. And people should support, and hopefully his competition. I don't know if he has competition down there. I don't know if they own all the stations in that market. Separate issue. But should take advantage of this, because it's totally the wrong thing. All right. Said what we're going to say about that.
Watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlan, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
Tomorrow on the program, we got White Sox baseball coming your way after Jen's news. The birthday girl. Working hard on her birthday. No big deal.
I saw I had cake, though. Gotta have cake.
This is pretty great. I think you're not going to want to miss this tomorrow. Dr. Willie Wilson will be here to play News or Ruse.
Oh, great.
No way.
Nah, look at here. Yeah. No.
That's exciting.
He's really going to be here. Yep. It doesn't get better than that.
I bet he'll be good at it.
He's our guy. Scares me. Still scares me. Because he's a force to be reckoned with.
He is.
Yeah.
Such an amazing story, Willie Wilson.
All right, so we shall. We're standing behind him. We are hoping for. We believe in Willie. What's the next election?
Willie. Well, we just did one.
We
so
did 1918 as the 1923. Willie 23.
Let's see, 19 plus 4. Gosh, it's been a long day.
That's not an easy. Odd years throw us off.
Yeah, I know. What is that?
There's no math in odd years.
Yeah, I don't understand. All right. So Willie 23, that's the way I'm looking at it. But
oh, that rhymes.
Yeah. Yeah, see?
You got something right there.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay. All right, so we will be back with you tomorrow at this very time, and actually starting at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Full 4-hour show tomorrow.
Right.
And Willie Wilson here in the 6 o'clock hour to play News or Ruse.